Hello, this is Leslie Garfield Tenzer, and this is Legal Tenzer, casual conversations on noteworthy legal topics. Earth Day is upon us, and interestingly, there's a solar eclipse at the same time.
Yeah.
So we are here, and I'm thrilled to have my colleague, Josh Galperin, with me to talk about Earth Day, not earthworms, Earth Day.
I'll talk earthworms.
The meaning of Earth Day, and just a little bit about it. I just want to point out before we get started, I'm a PACE, as many of my listeners know, and we do have the number one environmental law school program. And what that means is that we spend a lot of time doing things outside of actually the legal classroom, helping to improve the climate, improve the earth. And so Earth Day is particularly important to us. And it is my son's birthday that day. But anyway, So thank you for joining us. Tell me, what is the origin of Earth Day?
Well, there's a short answer and a longer answer. I'll give both, but I won't give the long answer. And the short answer is Senator Gaylord Nelson, a senator from Wisconsin, in 1970 decided that it was important to act on environmental problems, and that we needed some activism, mobilization to do that. And so he created Earth Day, which I'll say something else about what he created in a second. But the story is a little longer than that, because while Senator Nelson sort of initiated the first Earth Day in the United States, the concept actually came from a guy whose name, you'll have to forgive me, it's a much easier name to forget than Gaylord Nelson. John McConnell, or I think it's John McConnell. He was a peace activist, and he had actually come up with this concept for a sort of a day of action on the earth around environmental protection, and had raised the idea at the UN, and I think the UN Secretary General had signed off on sort of like a resolution. But that didn't really trickle down into the United States until Senator Nelson initiated this idea of Earth Day. And it was meant to be action for the earth, to motivate action for the earth. And so it was initially, the idea was sort of, there'll be teach-ins. People at schools across the country, we will stop our normal, you know, we're interrupt your regularly scheduled programming on arithmetic and whatever U.S. history, and we're going to tell you about environmental issues, which are things that people were just starting to recognize at that point. And I could say more on that, but I'll save it for later. And so it ended up being a lot of teach-ins, but also more activism beyond just the teaching, beyond just the disgusting issues that nobody ever heard. There were sit-ins. There were die-ins, which is like a sort of more fake die-in, more dramatic sit-in, and things of that nature. And I guess the last key point that we don't always talk about when we talk about Earth Day is that really, in some ways, the origin of Earth Day was the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement. They were focused on different topics. And, you know, we think a lot about today about intersectionality and all of these subjects. That was less of a way people were thinking back then. And so there was the civil rights movement. Let's get the Civil Rights Act passed. What leads to that? Well, the Montgomery bus boycott, the March on Selma, right? There was peace activism, anti-Vietnam activism. And, well, I'm not sure what led to that might have been how things were going in Vietnam, less than the activism in the U.S., but there were right marches on Washington and so forth. And so Earth Day was really meant to be in the spirit of that kind of popular arousal for these important topics that was going on in throughout the 60s. And then this was the new topic for the 70s.
It's interesting. I remember here, I've been here for quite some time. We did stop teaching that day. We actually had admitted students on that day.
Oh, interesting.
And we had a big thing out on the quad here, and we did stop teaching, and I didn't really know why. So now I know why.
There it is. Yeah.
That's interesting. So how has it, so it's interesting that you say that this is, I mean, not a new phenomenon, but new to the 70s. I watched Mad Men, which was a TV show that dealt with the 60s. And one of the scenes I remember is that they went on a picnic and they just left their trash. Because that's what you did, right?
Yeah.
So what is it that forced us to start thinking about environmentalism? And also, I want to be clear, environmentalism wasn't necessarily climate change at the time. It was just keeping the earth clean.
Yes. So there's a couple layers there. One, the not being climate change, environmentalism was not climate change, 100% true. Most people who were concerned about the environment didn't think about, you know, the industrialization impact on climate at all. People knew about it. Mm-hmm. Experts knew about it. Members of Congress who were voting on the Clean Air Act understood climate change, many, not all. But that was not the main issue back then as it is today. And then you mentioned sort of keeping the earth clean in a literal sense, like trash.
Yeah.
And that was a part of it too, although I have asserted and will assert here for the record that was a very minor part of Earth Day at that time. And that in fact, the keeping the Earth clean emerged more in the 1980s. And I can, if you're interested, can circle back to why I think that is. But first, let me answer the question you asked, which is where did this, like, what was the motivation for this? And there's a huge arc of environmental history, environmental protection history in the United States, starting, in pre-colonial through early colonial days to the present. But the sort of the proximate cause, the most immediate cause at that time was things were happening. There was Santa Barbara oil spill. There was the Cuyahoga River fire. There was the publication of Silent Spring, Rachel Carson's book about toxics in the environment and how they would affect humans. So there was just a lot of renewed attention to all of this. It came from a couple of sources. Well, it came from these big visual things like oil spills and rivers catching on fire. But also, this was the age in which the science of ecology was really burgeoning. I guess this dates me, although not quite as much. My wife's an ecologist, and her advisor for her PhD was getting his PhD back at that time, right? He was like one of the first people to graduate a PhD in ecology as a field. So, so ecology was new back then. And the reason that's important is because people understood that water might have chemicals in it or that air might have chemicals in it. But the connections between all of these systems, and most importantly, the connections between these environmental systems and human bodies and human health, were just becoming fully, I shouldn't say transparent, they're not transparent today, but we were only then beginning to realize these connections. So the birth of ecology as science, and then seeing these visual disasters, and then having people like Rachel Carson, who could take the science and pair that with the things we were seeing and write pretty eloquently about it. I happen to think the book was perhaps a little overwrought, not in its lessons, just in the way it's written, but nevertheless, she was writing poetically and powerfully about the things we were seeing, but didn't not quite
Right, the
understanding the
consequences.
consequences, right? And
Right.
helping us see the connections.
Yeah.
So those were powerful motivators to start acting on these subjects.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that today because climate change is at the forefront of, I mean, almost everything, right?
Yeah.
What pro or con, there's politics involved. So when did we go from, or has it been a sliding scale, going from kind of worrying that, our plants were dying because of things we weren't aware of, to really fearing for the planet itself?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, which is an embarrassing thing to admit.
No,
As
that's
a
what makes
teacher,
a good teacher. The
well, see, I
answer.
was going to say that. As a teacher, I have my students can never know that I don't
Oh,
know the answer.
see, I say good teachers want to admit they don't know something.
See, also, you have so many podcasts. I don't know
Well,
if this is the
there.
podcast that students are going to listen to, or if this is the
Well,
podcast
that's
somebody else is going to
true.
listen to. Either way, I don't really know the answer. I could opine a little bit, but I guess I would say that the feeling of existential dread for life on Earth,
Right.
and not just individual health, well-being, enjoyment of the places in which we like to go out for recreation, our hobbies like fishing or hunting or whatever it might be, that does feel newer in my lifetime, right? So I am, your listeners can know, I'm 42 years
Right,
old,
a
and
baby.
I came of age in the 80s and 90s, and then it was recycling and
Right.
it was snipping. How many of your listeners will remember, I don't know, but we had to snip the plastic, the things that hold the six packs of
Oh, yeah,
soda or beer
right, so it
together.
didn't get caught on
We
the
didn't want the
porpoise's
gooks
note.
or the porpoise to get caught in it. I don't mean to minimize that,
I hear about
but
that.
that was environmentalism when I was coming of age. When I first got interested in this, I thought, oh, that's sad, a porpoise is stuck. I was not thinking, oh, my children that I might someday have will not be able to survive on this earth. So that, I think climate change is unique in that way.
But it's interesting. Well, two things I want to say. One is it was called global warming, not climate change. Like
Yeah.
all of a sudden we've changed it. But Al Gore ran on a platform of ecology. And had he won, then I think it would have changed the trajectory of our governmental responses.
It probably would have. It's hard to know because maybe Congress would have that maybe the more conservative anti-regulatory member of the
Right.
Congress sort of pushed back
Right.
earlier.
Right.
But it would have made a difference. I mean, it's interesting to think about Al Gore, right? All of these politicians who want to run for high office write books,
Right.
and their books can often be full of platitudes and meaningless stuff. But his book was called Earth in the Balance,
Yeah.
and it was a pretty sophisticated environmental book that he wrote in 1992 or 1994 or something like that. I mean, that is, that's a lot different than the Audacity of Hope.
Right.
I've not read the Audacity of
Right.
Hope.
But
People
I understand what you're saying.
like President Obama's first book, and
Yeah.
but you get the idea. Earth
Yeah.
in the Balance,
Yeah. Yeah.
Audacity of
Right.
Hope.
Right. Right. Right.
That's a big deal. So it's not as if climate change is a new problem either, right? It's a problem that people have been aware of for a very long time. We just can't act on it, and that's hard.
It's hard. So Earth, let's get back to Earth Day for a second. What should people do to celebrate, or it should is a bad word, but what can people do to celebrate Earth Day?
Well, I mean, I'm hesitating because I'm not sure if celebrate is the right word,
Right.
right? I mean, this is part of this is am I allowed to be edgy and cynical?
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
This is part of my problem with Earth Day and environmentalism at large today. Earth Day was supposed to be like the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement for environmental protection.
Right.
And it has become a celebration of the fact that what we can recycle. Companies have made sustainability pledges. All of a sudden, it's like a self-congratulatory holiday. And I think that's partially because I'm definitely betraying my own perspectives on how environmentalism should work here. But I think that's largely because, like so much else in environmentalism, it's been bought out.
Yeah.
It's been bought out by the industries that feel like they can brand themselves as we're celebrating Earth Day. We've gone sustainable. We're going to change our logo to green for that day.
Right.
And that's very different than the civil rights movement was. That's very different than the anti-war movement. That's not protesting. That's not getting yourself arrested because you won't leave a lunch counter or
Yeah,
even,
tie yourself to a nuclear, whatever, silo.
exactly. It's not activism
Right,
anymore.
right.
And it's not just that it's not activism. Not everybody can afford to be an activist. And financially, because of the risks that they're putting themselves in. I mean, there's all reasons. I think people should be activists, but not everybody can be. But it's not so much that it's not activism, it's more that it's become an opportunity for people to celebrate what they've done when
Right.
we don't have that much to celebrate. We have the Clean Air Act, huge success. The Clean Water Act, huge success. And I could go on and on. That was 19, I just listed laws from the early
That are being
1970s
chipped away at.
that are being chipped away every day. And we have done very little since then. Inflation Reduction Act, the infrastructure bill had little positive tweaks towards environmental law, but we've basically done very little since the first Earth Day, other than the big things we did at the beginning. And so what are we celebrating? It's supposed to be activism.
Right.
So what should we do? Right? Maybe we should be tying ourselves to things, right?
Yeah. Although I'm going to push back just a little and say that it does bring about an awareness that we might not have otherwise had. Like we are aware that April 22nd of every year, we're going to be cognizant of where our Earth is at. Now, whether it pushes you a little bit to do something, but I do, it's there was a, you don't remember this, but there was an album called Free to Be You and Me. It was by Marla Thomas, and it was like the big thing when I was a kid. Now I really aged myself. And there was a song on there that was all about saving the earth. And this was in the late 60s, early 70s. So, and it was celebrated because it meant being aware. So I agree with you, but it does bring awareness. Now, on the other hand, every day is a day now. There's National French Fry Day and there's National Donut
Don't knock National Donut Day.
Day. Or French fries. But yeah, I see your point. I see your point. So is there anything we like, what can we do to
Well, I
bring it
mean,
back?
yeah, how do we balance raising awareness without raising awareness that is celebratory and
Right.
therefore might undermine the motivation to keep doing more, right?
I see your point. Your point is if we're celebrating, it's like we accomplished our goal
Yeah, there's a
and we have it
study, and
done.
I wish I had the information, the more details on hand. But there's a study that I've read and cited occasionally in my work that is about basically says that when folks take pro-conservation, pro-environmental actions, the first one is makes it less likely that they'll do a second one. So, oh, I turn off the water when I brush my teeth. I don't keep it running. So why should I buy a hybrid car?
Right.
Or
I
more,
see.
or why should I recycle? I'm doing this
Right.
one thing. People don't do it explicitly, but in this experimental study, that's what they've learned. And I think Earth Day can be a little bit like that if it's congratulatory. So how do we solve that problem? Well, one is just to hope everybody will listen to your podcast and say, Calpern's exactly right. We have to do something differently. That's the number one way. The number two way might be, and we have to figure out, I don't want this to come across. I'm not going to dial back what I'm about to say. I'm just going to preface it. Big corporate sustainability commitments are important.
Right.
We have to find a way to let big corporate sustainability action happen without making us believe, us as the
Right.
people, voters, activists, scholars believe that corporations are doing enough.
Okay.
And we have to let that happen without the corporations believing themselves, convincing themselves that they are doing enough.
I understand.
So for me, we've got to be less celebratory about those things. Not because they're not important, but because I think it does tend to undermine our expectation that we need government to act here.
Right.
And that sort of brings us back to something I mentioned earlier about like recycling and snipping the plastic holders for the soda cans, which is, I'm not sure I could prove this, but in my history of my own life, I see that as having been a point at which somebody convinced us,
Right.
somebody, some power convinced us as the people
Right.
that, oh, this is about individual responsibility. We need to recycle and we need to snip the things and we need to not litter. That's how we're going to solve environmental problems. But as soon as we're convinced that it becomes a response, a mass individualized pursuit as opposed to a collective pursuit, then we let the pressure off of the people who actually have the most environmental power, which is both legislators, our
Right.
governments, and the private firms that pollute, that consume, that do a lot more than any of us do.
And I'm going to take it a step further. Voters.
Voters, absolutely.
Because the voters, if they think everything's okay, that doesn't become a priority for where they place their vote.
Exactly. And so the way I would phrase that, because I 100% agree with you, is if this is a political problem through and through. When we say, oh, we just need to recycle, or the corporate sustainability efforts are solving the problems, we're saying, oh, we're beyond politics.
Right.
This is individual action or it's corporate action, but that's beyond politics. But it can't be beyond politics. It has to be voters making choices to elect people who will advance government action. And it's about individuals doing political actions, which is, could be chaining themselves to things. And I'm not really trying to encourage everybody to chain themselves to things, but that's politics too. So it's voting, it's turning out and making comments, it's convincing your neighbors not to recycle, although that's useful, but it's not convince your neighbors to recycle, it's convince your neighbors to vote for or get involved with the political
Right.
process.
So, last question. Now that you killed Earth Day for me,
Yep.
what are you going to do on Earth?
Well, here at the Elizabeth Haupt School of Law, the number one environmental law program in the galaxy, we
Right.
have a student faculty band, and the student
Okay.
faculty band gets together but once a year to play at the annual Earth Day Jam. So I'm the drummer in that band.
Oh,
So
cool.
that's one of the things I'll be doing that day. The second thing I will be doing that day is our PACE Environmental Law Review is hosting a symposium for which I'm the faculty advisor, and I will be helping make sure that's all running smoothly. And the third thing I will be doing that day is there is the annual, this will be the, I think, 11th or 12th annual New Directions in Environmental Law Conference, which was originally a conference hosted by the Yale and is now a conference hosted by Yale and PACE together. And this year, NYU is going to be involved for the first time as well. And we're going to have the first event for the 2024 New Directions in Environmental Law Conference will be hosted here at PACE. And then I will go down to New York City for the remainder of that event. And I will say that it is an event that is also co-hosted this year with the Law Students for Climate Accountability.
Well, oh, yes, a great. We've had a podcast about
You
that.
talked to Camilo about
Yes,
it.
I
Yes,
did. I did.
excellent.
Yeah.
I raised that because I'm not, I mean, it sounds like I'm plugging this stuff, and
Yeah,
this
that's
podcast
okay.
may come out later
Yeah.
than when all these things happen. I'm not plugging so much as saying, Law Students for Climate Accountability is an assertive organization that is trying to say, when corporations are doing bad for the environment, we should call them out on that.
Right.
And not just and we
and
not
not give
just praise them. We
and
should praise them where praise is
right
due, but we also should criticize,
and
right?
not give them our manpower.
And not give them our manpower and not send students to work for the law firms or
Right.
let students know if
Right.
they're going to work for a law firm that's causing more harm than good with environmental protection.
Right.
And so there are organizations out there, this is the sort of the punchline of this, like Law Students for Climate Accountability. There are organizations out there that do a lot of work to continue the activist political job of environmentalism, but are also empowering individuals through a more, as individuals as workforce, people in the work, law students as soon to be members of the workforce. So there's places where this stuff overlaps, which is exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. All right. Well, you've given me a lot of information to digest. I will not chain myself to a nuclear silo,
You change your
but
mind.
I may do something else.
Anyway, nukes wouldn't be the first place to go. Go to the coal plants.
All right. Thank you for joining me, and I really appreciate this. It's
My pleasure.
always
You're
good to
welcome.
talk to you. Thanks.
So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, or a professor or attorney with whom you'd like me to speak, send us an email at legaltenzer@westacademic.com and send us any suggestions you may have. We love getting feedback. Have a great day. This podcast was created in collaboration with West Academic. Additional episodes can be found on the West Academic Study Aids collection. Students may already have access through their school subscription and can check with their law school library for access. For a limited time, Legal Tenzer listeners can save 15% on titles on the West Academic store with the promo code TENZER15 at checkout.